Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. We start with the good. And, Jim, we could have saved a lot of people a lot of trouble if they had just listened to us almost 2 years ago when the president nominated Chuck Hagel to be defense secretary. It's now being reported today that Hagel is resigning, and it looks like he was pushed out. The New York Times story suggests that it came after pressure from the administration. The president will explain this to the public after we record this on Monday morning. But there seems to be two streams of thought here. Number one is that Chuck Hagel was brought in to wind things down in Afghanistan and oversee sequestration at the Pentagon. And now circumstances with ISIS and other challenges have changed the mission of the Pentagon. Others simply say that Obama needed a scapegoat over Ebola and ISIS, and Chuck Hagel was the easiest one to pick. So what do you make of it?
Every theory has some weight to it. why do we have to choose, Greg? It's possible he's a bit incompetent and that Obama didn't know what he was doing when he appointed him. And that, you know, as Hagel, he did have his rare public appearances. He did occasionally offer a succinct assessment of the world when he said the world is on fire. He had a terrible confirmation hearing. We'd often kind of scoffed as a guy who had not necessarily been up to it, had kind of been cruising on the post-senatorial lecture circuit for a while. Has a terrible confirmation hearing. Appears to be just window dressing to put a bipartisan spin on what we suspect were going to be deep defense cuts. This could have worked for Obama if the world had remained at peace. The world wasn't willing to play ball with that. It was kind of striking how rarely you would see Hagel, whether it's the Sunday shows or making press announcements at the Pentagon. I mean, not every Secretary of Defense has to be Rumsfeld going out and giving the daily briefing and offering, you know, regular updates and stuff. But I had regularly reported that he was invisible, you know, belongs on the side of a milk carton. I will gleefully recall that in February, the Politico's defense newsletter scoffed. That is ridiculous to think this, and he's doing a fantastic job, and only crazy right-wingers could be complaining, yada, yada, yada. And of course, now we see from a senior White House official, quote, he wasn't up to the job, unquote. And as somebody pointed out, it's kind of interesting to see an administration let Hagel insist that he's resigning voluntarily, and then just take a dump on him like this by, you know, these kinds of, you know, backstabbing assessments of him, which, by the way, appear to be accurate. Like, it's not like he's a strong defensive. No, Hagel was doing a great job. Things were going hunky-dory for U.S. national security around the world, and this is a great injustice. You know, he was a bad appointment, and now we see 2 years later, it's probably done some real damage to the country.
Jim, given Obama's attitude towards Republicans in the past 2 weeks, you think there'll be another Republican running the Pentagon the last 2 years here?
Well, as somebody observed, what better way to respond to a wholesale drubbing of the Democratic Party than to get rid of the one Republican in the cabinet? Although I got to tell you, this is a non-entity in terms of, I actually am not sure if the election had that much to do with this. Hagel's, you know, lack of success has been, the only thing that the election had to do with is probably pushing it back. Because Hagel's been pretty bad at Pentagon for the better part of 2 years now.
Yeah, well, again, we could have told you that and saved you
a lot of
misery there. All right, on to the bad martini now. And, of course, the last couple of days of last week were dominated in the bad martini by the president deciding to ignore his own counsel, which was recorded many, many times, saying that he did not have the power to suspend deportation, grant legal status, however you want to say it, to millions upon millions of people in this country illegally. He did it anyway. And so he appeared on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos. And Stephanopoulos asked him, well, if this was okay for you on immigration, what about a Republican who decides that, you know, some people are paying too much in taxes and they're not really going to prosecute if they decide not to pay them? Now, Stephanopoulos, we have his question and the follow-up, because the president completely ignored the question in the first answer, only to say that nothing was happening on the status of these people, so he had to act. And here's how it went.
How do you respond to the argument? A future president comes in, wants lower taxes. Doesn't happen. Congress won't do it. He says, I'm not going to prosecute those who don't pay capital gains tax.
So you don't think it would be legitimate for a future president to make that argument?
With respect to taxes,
yeah.
Absolutely not. But what is true today is we don't audit every single person, but we still expect that people are going to go ahead and follow the law. And we have limited resources. We have to make sure that we prioritize those folks who are most dangerous.
So just like illegals, you might actually get away with it, but how dare a president actually respond to that situation since the government can't respond to all those people?
So basically what Obama's saying here, whether he realizes it or not, and this is, you know, when you can put into the category of maybe the president isn't as smart as he's convinced he is, that theoretically a president could say, you know, I really think the rich are paying plenty in taxes, so I'm instructing the IRS to not audit anyone paying, you know, more than X amount, or not audit anyone making more than X amount. And under the Obama philosophy of the executive branch, that's perfectly legal. So it's not that he can cut the taxes per se. He can just say, you're just not going to get audited, and then pay what you feel like. I'm not saying I'd recommend that philosophy for the next Republican president, but that's, you know, that, oh, in his own words, Obama is saying that's an opening. Wait, this is the bad martini? This is the good martini? No. Executive branch lawlessness is not a good thing, no matter who the party is. And it just says something about Obama that, you know, he might as well have just gone and said, look, no, that would not be okay, George, because that would be a Republican. When I do it, it's different. I'm the munificent sun god who stepped down into the presidency. And there isn't much of a, you know, justification for that. And I think that, you know, I give us a molecule of credit to George Stephanopoulos for putting this before Obama and making him realize the consequences of what he's doing here. But as usual, Obama's capacity for cognitive dissonance is pretty spectacular.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And this probably made decent headlines around the nation. It was certainly huge news over the weekend here in the Washington area as longtime D.C. Mayor Marion Barry died. He actually hadn't been mayor since the late 90s. He was a four-term mayor, interrupted by a 4 years off, part of that time in prison for being caught on camera smoking crack in an FBI sting in a D.C. hotel room in 1990. He was also mayor of D.C. at a time when it was known as the murder capital of the world. I know it toggled back and forth between D.C. and Detroit, and being a Michigan guy, I was always happy to see Detroit lose the title from time to time. But it's interesting, Jim, that since he died early Sunday morning, that doesn't seem to be much of the focus in Washington and beyond. It's about how he's this transformative civil rights figure, how he helped black entrepreneurs in the city, which on some levels may be true. But the idea that this is not a huge part of his legacy is ridiculous.
You're right. But as of Sunday morning, this was, you know, dominating local news. Well, there's more to him than the incident of being caught smoking crack. Reasonably enough, correct statement, although one, you know, it's not like we can airbrush that out of history. But that's a fairly glaring, you know, moment in his you know, adult life. And then the second thing is that it's not like the rest of it. It's a fantastic record as mayor, spoiled by this one blemish of this. I mean, and this is the point I tried to lay out in the morning jolt. He was a terrible mayor. He was a terrible, terrible mayor, both in his first terms of being, you know, when Washington became the murder capital of the world, or when he came back. In both of those times, I think the single clearest indicator of how bad things were was just this absolute deterioration in city services and everything from, you know, can they plow the snow when it snows? The school's getting worse and worse. New York City and a whole bunch of other major American cities experienced a dramatic reduction in crime. This is the, you know, Rudy Giuliani years back in the mid-90s. You saw it in L.A., you saw it in a whole bunch of places. D.C. never really had that. It tapered off a bit, but there was never this revolution in policing. There was never this dramatic improvement in the performance of the Washington police force. And there are still a lot of neighborhoods in D.C. that are really, really bad and dangerous. And that this is, you know, we've had different and better mayors since then. But it was kind of striking to see how bad parts of D.C. got during his time. Crime was a big part of it. The schools are terrible. City services are terrible. Corruption is awful. And then once Marion Barry left the mayoral office after, you know, 4 years of really getting nothing done and the city continuing to deteriorate, including serious budgetary problems, Marion Barry failed to pay taxes for a whole bunch of years. Like, I guess he thought that was optional. Another advocate of big government who did not believe that he had to pay for it. And then he kept, you know, he got elected to the city council and he kept having more scandals of, you know, getting paid money from people on contracts and, you know, giving a city contract to his girlfriend at the time. And just one shady deal after another. And then you throw in his racist statements about Asians and their dirty businesses. Marion Barry was not a nice man, and the whitewashing and the glorification going on of him yesterday and today is kind of appalling. So I stand athwart history yelling, stop deifying Marion Barry Because even if you want to overlook the crack incident, he was a terrible mayor, and that's really why people should be more mad at him.
Yeah. Well, just to follow up on the crack, though, we can't let that go right away, because he was on the Daily Rundown back in June of this year with Chuck Todd, and listen to this exchange where they talk about that incident, and Marion Barry, talk about whitewashing history, says he never actually smoked crack.
The federal government never proved there was crack in that pipe. Jurors didn't believe it. The answer is no. And so, therefore, people ought to stop.
So you deny that you ever smoked crack?
Yes.
No, you've never smoked crack in your life?
Never smoked crack. Simple as that.
These are not the droids you're looking for, Jim.
I was going to say, what was in the pipe? Bubbles? I just went through the whole process, but there was no crack in it. You know, that's So, I mean, look, that's the level of denial we're talking about here. Some people who say you shouldn't speak ill of the dead, and I can understand that. And for everybody who knew him and liked him and his family and friends, I hope they can find some peace in the days and weeks and months to come. I take no glee in the man's death. It's sad and unfortunate, but don't speak ill of the dead doesn't mean lie about who they were and what they did. And that's what I feel like some of the coverage really has veered into, that direction of averting our eyes from a very unsavory record as a political figure in the city.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave it there for now. Certainly an unforgettable figure. We can certainly say that. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.